It's been said that no man can become a permanent success without taking others along with him. You take them along for their benefit and yours, using a pool of talents and knowledge to gain success. It's called the Mastermind Principle, and it's the hub of this entire philosophy.
There's a good definition of the mastermind. It's an alliance of two or more people working in harmony with a positive mental attitude for the attainment of a definite end. Two or more people working in harmony, perfect harmony, with a positive mental attitude for the attainment of a definite end. Now that definition sounds simple enough, yet there is very much more back of it than meets the ear and the eye. When I first was introduced to Andrew Carnegie, the first question I asked him was to tell me in as few words as he possibly could to what he owed his fortune. And he then said, well, my fortune is due entirely to the work of my mastermind group. And he said that mastermind is not made up of any one mind. It's made up of more than 20 men whose background, experience, education, temperament, and ability have been combined and blended and directed to a definite end in a spirit of perfect harmony. And that end is the making and the marketing of steel. That was the first time in my life I ever heard of the mastermind. And later on, as I commenced to contact these other men of great achievement, I found out there was no such a possibility as great achievement except by the application of the mastermind. That is to say, unless you learn to connect your mind with the minds of other people, use their education, their ability, their foresight, their temperament, and sometimes their capital, you'll never get very far. All of these great achievements, like General Motors and General Electric, Commonwealth Edison, are the results of mastermind alliances, including the application and use of other people's money. The mastermind principle is the medium through which one may procure the full benefits of the experience, the training, the education, and specialized knowledge of others of influence, just as completely as if their minds were in reality one's own. For example, contemplate what happened in the life of Thomas A. Edison, who was thrown out of school after he had been there 3 months and sent home with a note to his parents saying that he had an adult mind and couldn't take an education. He never went back to school again. He never knew anything about any of the sciences, yet he selected as his major purpose in life a calling that made it necessary for him to use all of the sciences, practically. He had to have technical ability. He had to have scientific training. He had to have a great variety of things, and yet he had none of those. And what did he do about it? He did what every successful man does who undertakes something that's beyond the realm of his own achievements. He surrounded himself with men who did have that ability. Men who did understand chemistry, men who did understand physics, men who had the necessary training that he himself didn't possess, and he told them what to do, and they showed him how to do it. And in every instance where you find a man of outstanding achievement in any calling, you will find that he has been a success as a result of a mastermind alliance of one sort or another. Up here in Minnesota, they have the great Mayo Brothers Clinic, probably the greatest medical clinic of its nature in the entire world. And the reason it's great, there are many reasons for it, but one of the reasons is that they have in that institution medical men with almost every conceivable type of specialty training, so that when they put a man through there and he's looked over by all of those men, why, they know what's inside of him and what's outside of him. There's no small number of doctors could ever render the service such as the Mayo Brothers render, because they understand and use the mastermind principle. Through the experience and knowledge of the geologist, one may understand the structure of this earth without training in geology. And through the experience and knowledge of a chemist, one may make practical use of chemistry without being a trained chemist. And incidentally, a man may choose as his major objective in life any purpose that he desires. And even though that purpose involves the education which he does not possess, he can easily bridge that deficiency by surrounding himself with people who do have that education. Through the knowledge and skill of scientists, technicians, physicists, and practical engineers, one may become a successful inventor. Now, the second premise of the mastermind is this: an active alliance of two or more minds in a spirit of perfect harmony for the attainment of a common objective stimulates each individual's mind to a higher degree of courage than that which is ordinarily experienced, and prepares the way for that state of mind known as faith. If you've ever had the experience of sitting down in what you might call a bull session or a round table session and starting in to talk about any problem or any subject, you'll find that as the discussion goes on, you learn more and more about that subject. And oftentimes, the man that will come forth with the most enlightening conversation on the subject will be the one that knows the least about it. Because the harmony of minds enables each individual mind to tune in on sources of information not available to you under any other circumstance. That mastermind alliance stimulates the mind and jumps it up, steps it up, where you can tune in on the ether, which perhaps connects your thinking brain with infinite intelligence. That's a theory. It might even be a fact. The third premise, a mastermind alliance properly conducted stimulates each mind in the alliance to move with enthusiasm, with personal initiative, with imagination and courage to a degree far above that which the individual experiences when moving without such an alliance. If you have the right kind of mastermind allies, when the going is hard, when you have problems that you don't know how to solve, you just go around and get your mastermind allies together and start talking about that problem. Start talking with the feeling that somewhere along in the conversation, somebody will come up with the answer. And you'll be surprised oftentimes at the person who does come up with it, maybe the one you least expect. And the third premise, a mastermind alliance properly conducted stimulates each mind in the alliance to move with enthusiasm, personal initiative, imagination, and courage to agree far above that which the individual experiences when moving without such an alliance. I duplicate that because I want you to keep it in mind. And the fourth premise, to be effective, a mastermind alliance must be active. Not just enough to form a group and say, well, we're going to get together, and that's my mastermind group. It must be active. The mere association of minds is not enough. They must engage in pursuit of a definite purpose, and they must move with perfect harmony. And they must do it continuously. And without the factor of harmony, the alliance may be nothing more than ordinary cooperation or friendly coordination of effort, which is something vastly different from the mastermind. The mastermind gives one full access to the spiritual powers of the other members of that alliance. The spiritual powers now, mind you. A great number of years ago, I had the privilege of dining at the Chicago Athletic Club with the Big Six of Chicago. Now, the Big Six were William Wrigley Jr., A.D. Lasker, the owner of the Lord & Thomas Advertising Agency, Mr. Rich and Mr. Hertz, who founded the Yellow Taxi Cab Company, Mr. McCulloch, who owned the Parmalee Transfer and Express business in Chicago, the largest of its kind in the world, and John R. Thompson, who owned the chain of stores. All of those men started, not too many years before I'd met them, without any capital, started on the basis of meeting every Saturday night, going into a discussion of each man's definite major purpose, and each one had a definite object he wanted to attain, and nobody had any money. And when I met them, the combined wealth of those six men was around $25 million. They had all become successful. They had become successful by lending one another the mental attitude wrapped up in this principle of a mastermind. It's an astounding thing what can happen when two or more people get together and continuously meet and discuss the things that the two of them want to do. And incidentally, you as an individual may have one objective and the man who is in the mastermind alliance with you may have another. You don't have to have the same objective at all. But if you work together in a spirit of friendly harmony, you will find that you will get results. The fifth premise, it's a matter of established record that all individual successes based upon any kind of achievement above mediocrity are attained through the mastermind principle and not by individual effort alone. Most successes are the result of personal power, and personal power of sufficient proportions to enable one to rise above mediocrity is not possible without the application of the mastermind principle. I had the privilege during Franklin D. Roosevelt's first administration of helping to build for the president and his administration perhaps the most astounding and outstanding mastermind alliance this or any other nation has ever known. And the object of that mastermind alliance was to stop the stampede of fear. Remember, after Roosevelt went into office, shortly after that, they had to close down all of the banks because they were having runs on banks, and people were in such a state of fear we had to do something drastic about it. We had to organize all of the public opinion molding machinery of the country and place it back at the president without bias, without prejudice, without regard to political affiliation. And here are the six factors that went into that mastermind alliance. First of all, both houses of Congress working in harmony with the president. For the first time in the history of this nation, we had both houses of Congress working tooth and toenail in harmony with FDR. They forgot about political branches. They forgot about political expediency. They became as one behind the President of the United States. And the President of the United States at that time and in that emergency had no brand as a Democrat or a Republican. Second, the majority of the newspaper publishers of America. We induced them to take the scare headlines of business depression out of the paper and to supplant them with the better lines of business recovery. Start talking about business recovery instead of business depression. And then we wrote appropriate news items for the newspapers and sent them out all over the country. And as far as I know, no paper ever refused to print exactly what we sent out. And third, the radio station operators of the country. They were sent material to use, and they used it just as it was sent. They got on the idea of business recovery. They got back at the president. And number four, the churches of all denominations. That was one of the most beautiful things, ladies and gentlemen, I have ever hoped to see in all of my life. Was Catholics and Protestants, Jews and Gentiles, all getting behind the President of the United States and forgetting for the time being whether they were Catholics or Protestants, whether they were Jews or Gentiles. It was one of the most magnificent things I ever hoped to witness. Number five, leaders of both major political parties. I'm not talking about the rank and file, I'm talking about the leaders. Did you know that out of several hundred congressmen and senators, the real leaders who manage your affairs and mine and who are responsible for them consist of less than 50 people? Less than 50. The rest are just like sheep. The real leaders are the ones that set the policy and carry out the policy. We got these leaders of both political parties for the first time in the history of this nation to get back of FDR. They didn't just stop to question whether he was a Democrat or whether he's a Republican, whether he's going to help their party or not. They got back of him 100%. They stayed back at him long enough to get this depression stopped, to get this stampede stopped. And then the most magnificent thing of all, perhaps, number six, a majority of the American people of all political and religious leanings, the rank and file. And how did we get to those American people? Well, we got to them through those five public opinion molding sources that I've just mentioned, especially the radio and the newspapers and the pulpits. Now, had it not been for the organization of the machinery to which public opinion in this country was organized and put back of Roosevelt under the mastermind principle, I'm telling you that the results he got in his first administration never would have been attained in that administration, if in any one of them. Here was an alliance of many millions of people, which in the aggregate produced power such as this nation had never observed previously, and it was sufficient to stop a national stampede of fear and averted what might otherwise have become a national catastrophe or a rebellion of the people. Andrew Carnegie and his industrial staff, consisting of more than 20 business associates, formed the most outstanding and the most effective business mastermind that I have ever known. I found that same principle obtaining all the way down through all of the experiences that I had with men, namely that the men who were succeeding in the greatest way used the brains and the personality and the influence of other people. The word contact, ladies and gentlemen, is a great word. Do you know that if you have the right contacts, you can do anything you want? Contacts, having somebody at the right time to come to the front and do something for you is a perfectly marvelous thing. And no matter who you are and what business you're in, it's up to you, it's your responsibility to commence forming contacts, friendly contacts. Especially down the banking business. You never know when you need something down the bank. Have a contact down there. Somebody knows you. Surprising what you can do through contacts. Incidentally, one of the places, perhaps the greatest place, where the Mastermind Alliance can be used to greatest advantage is in the home between the man and his wife. I suspect I have been responsible for influencing the building of more masterminds in the home than probably any other living person. And every time I hear of having accomplished a feat like that, I feel proud of it. I have reestablished and revitalized domestic relationships in thousands of homes. I was impressed when I first met Mrs. Henry Ford with her story about the beginning of his career. Back in the days when she was standing back in the kitchen with an eyedropper dropping gasoline into a little gadget he'd made, drop at a time, while he was manipulating an electric battery trying to get it to spark. This gadget was a piece of 6-inch pipe, on one end of which had been sealed, and in the other end had been projected a piston. And Mrs. Ford was powering this gasoline in through what since has become known as the carburetor. And he was trying to ignite it from within. And after weeks of effort, he got the ignition to kick that piston out just one time. And there was born an industry that has belted this earth, a fortune that will go on going on, a fortune that has employed millions of people, changed the American way of life. Going back to the time when Henry Ford and Mrs. Ford were working in that humble way. And she told me of a time when, while he was building that first automobile, he needed $30 worth of parts, foundry parts. He went down to the foundry and ordered them. And when he went down to get them, he told the foundry man he didn't have the money, but he would come down at the end of the month and pay for them. And the foundry man said, "Oh, no, you don't. I wouldn't trust you with a nickel, not on that darn contraption you're wasting your time on, not on your life. Money on the barrelhead or no go." He went back and told Mrs. Ford, and she said, "Well, Henry, you know, we have $1,200 in the bank that we've been saving with the understanding we'd only use it to build a house." He said, "Yes, that's it. We're not going to use it for anything else either." She said, "Well, don't use it for anything else, but borrow $30 from it and go down and pay the man." She said, "Well, after all, we are good for $30, aren't we?" And he said, "Well, if you put it that way, I guess we are." So he went back down and drew out $30, borrowed it from themselves, and got his parts. That shows you how lacking Henry Ford was in the beginning with the necessary courage to do the things he wanted to do. It was the influence of Mrs. Ford. It was the influence of the female side of that mastermind alliance that made the great Ford industry what it was. And it's perfectly astounding. It's miraculous. What can happen when a man's wife is back of him like Mrs. Ford was back of for her husband? I happen to know the intimate life of Thomas A. Edison and Mrs. Edison, and the same thing was true there. Mr. Edison said that the vast majority of his inventions were due to the continuous mastermind alliance of his wife. And you know, he used to work until very late at night, and when he'd come home, no matter what hour, she was always up waiting for him and had some hot milk and toast ready for him. That was about all he could take at night. And then they sat down, and before they went to bed, he went over his experiments with her, told her what his problems had been. In other words, they reviewed his whole day's work. And she did it in such a way that she gave him the courage to keep on keeping on when the going was exceedingly hard. Now, there are two general types of mastermind alliances. Number one, alliances for purely social or personal reasons, consisting of one's relatives, friends, and religious advisors, where no material gain is sought. The most important of this type, of course, is the mastermind alliance between a man and his wife. And number two, an alliance for business or professional advancement consisting of individuals who have a personal motive or a material or financial nature connected with the object of the alliance. There must be a motive. You can have no mastermind alliance without every individual member of it having a motive. You must be getting something out of it. You can't form a mastermind alliance and use the brains and the experience and the friendship and the love and affection and maybe the capital of the other fellow without him getting something back from it. Even though he's willing to give it for a time, don't you accept it. Don't accept anything from anybody unless you're giving something of an equivalent value in return in one way or another. Bear that in mind. Just don't do it. Because if you do, the relationship will play out sooner or later. And I made it a point never, never to receive favors from anybody without returning those favors. It's a good habit for anybody to follow.
One alliance you cannot do without comes from within. We'll continue our look at the mastermind concept and forging a connection with all the facets of your inner self. You'll hear how Napoleon Hill developed his own inner support group and how you can do the same thing.
Well, before I tell you what my system is, I want to tell you about one of the most interesting mastermind allies that I had. His name was Dr. Elmer R. Gates of Chevy Chase, Maryland. Andrew Carnegie knew about Dr. Gates and about his marvelous system of drawing upon the invisible powers of the universe, and he sent me to see Dr. Gates with a letter of introduction. When I got there, I presented my letter, and his secretary said, "Well, I'm sorry, but Dr. Gates is not available for the next 3 hours. He's now sitting for ideas." I said, "I beg your pardon. He is now sitting for ideas." I said, "Where is he sitting?" I looked around. Well, she said, only Dr. Gates would be able to answer that one. He has a secret room into which he disappears when he wants to sit for ideas. You can come back within 3 hours, or you can wait if you like. I said, "I'm going to wait. I don't want to get out of this place until I see Dr. Gates." In about 2.5 hours, he came out, and I told him about my conversation with his secretary. He said, "By the way, would you like to see where I sit for ideas?" I said, "I certainly would." And he took me back into a room about 12 by 12, Walls had been insulated to cut out all sound. There was nothing in that room but a table against the wall, and over the table an electric switch. On the table a bunch of scratch pads and some pencils. And he explained to me that when he, and by the way, he was a great inventor, a great scientist. When he wanted to solve a problem and there was an unknown quantity X that he hadn't found, he goes into his concentration room, shuts off the lights, shuts off the sound, and concentrates his mind upon that which he wants. And sometimes he gets the answer within a matter of minutes, sometimes in a matter of hours, and once in a while not at all. Sitting for ideas, letting his subconscious mind contact him with the source of knowledge necessary to give him the answer to his problem. And by that method, he created over 250 inventions which have been registered in the Patent Office of the United States. I became intrigued by Dr. Gates's experiment because if he had not been a man of great achievement, I would have written him off as a long-haired nut, as we sometimes call him. But there was a man of great achievement, and I can always learn from the man who has done more than I have in life. I started to study this subject of ESP, and I came up with a system of my own, which I would now like to describe for you. First of all, I created these invisible entities. I call them my invisible guides. Each one assigned to do for me automatically, night and day, a job that I need to have done in order to carry out my objective in life. And the number one of these invisible guides is the guide to sound physical health. Now, his job is to keep my body eternally in good shape. The moment I lay the carcass down at night and go to sleep, he goes to work on me. And when I get up in the morning, I feel like $1 million, or maybe 2 or 3 million, depending on what I'm thinking about. I shouldn't go into any detail as to whether or not he's doing a good job. You can take a look at me and come in contact with him and make your own decision. When I tell you that I've only been sick once in my life, really sick, you know that I have had an unusual system to keep well. If all the doctors had to depend upon men like myself, believe you me, they'd have to change their profession. They certainly would. Well, number two is the guide to financial prosperity. And he has put me in a position where I don't need anything at all of a material nature that I can't buy. I don't have any debts. I don't have any mortgages on our home. I don't have any mortgages on our car. I don't buy cars or anything else on installment plans. We have funds, well, in so many different institutions, I wouldn't be able to name all of them. We're not as rich as Carnegie, but we're as rich as we need to be. We have enough absolute security in old age, which gives you a wonderful feeling to know that as old age comes along, you don't have to go to the poorhouse or depend upon relatives. So the guide to financial prosperity is doing all right. And number three is the guide to peace of mind. Now, his job is to keep my mind eternally free from all of the causes and the effects of fear and worry. You know, fear and worry killed off more talented people and untalented people than all the other subjects combined in all probability. Fear and worry. I don't have any fears. I used to have a flock of them before I adopted the system, but I don't have them anymore. They're all gone. And the next two are twins. They are the guides to hope and faith. They give me hope for what's going to happen to me in the future in connection with my aims and purposes, and backing up that hope, the faith in my ability to do it. And I want to tell you that they're doing a good job. My hopes are not just a matter of reaching up in thin air and pulling down something that I'd like to do, but I have not only backed up those hopes with faith, but you who come in contact closely with us here can see that we have a very close-knit, well-organized plan, and we're carrying out that plan, and you're becoming a part of it. You're becoming a very powerful and important part of that plan. And the next two are also twins. They are the guides to love and romance. And when I speak of love, I speak of that great emotion in its widest and broadest and most divine application. Love and romance. I can find romance out of everything that crosses my path, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. If it's unpleasant, I romance the idea that I'll find that seed of its equivalent benefit and I'll make use of it. Love. What a marvelous thing it is to have a feeling of love in your heart. I have been accused of carrying this emotion to extremes on some occasions, but I don't think so. Mrs. Hill and I were driving out in the mountains of California about 10 years ago, and we saw on the side of the road an enormous rattlesnake coiled and ready to strike. Annie Lou saw it about the same time I did. She said, "Hit it, right, hit it." Well, I didn't hit it. I wheeled around and entirely bypassed it. She said, "Why didn't you hit it?" I said, "My dear, the reason I didn't hit it, it's on its own ground, attending its own business, and that's exactly what you and I are going to do. We're not going to kill something that doesn't concern us." And that's the attitude that I would take toward a rattlesnake or anything else. If it didn't try to bother me or some of my friends, I wouldn't bother it. In other words, I've changed my whole attitude, not only toward my fellow men, but toward every living creature on the face of this earth. The next one is a lately acquired member of my imaginary family. He's the guide to patience. I acquired that during the past 10 years with experiences that required a lot of patience. Thank heavens, that's one of the things I can count on that I got out of those 10 years that have been beneficial. Patience. Patience enables you to time things properly, not just to plant the seed today and then go back tomorrow and dig it up, see whether it's going to germinate or not. If you plant your seed with faith in the right kind of soil at the right time of the year and know that the seed is sound, you can forget about it because nature takes over at that point. And for every seed of wheat that you put in the ground under the proper circumstances, nature will bring you back 500 or 600 grains to compensate you for your intelligence. And it works on other planes just the same as in the soil. Number 9 is the guide to overall wisdom. And his job is to keep me benefited by every experience that touches my life, whether it's good or bad, positive or negative. Everything that touches my life is grist for my mill. I make some use out of it. If it's an unpleasant experience, I try to surround myself with enough protection to see that the same thing won't happen again. And believe you me, we all need that kind of a protection. Not to let things that happen to you that are unpleasant happen over and over and over again. I like to remember that very interesting Chinese proverb which says, "If a man injure me once, shame on him. But if that man injure me twice, shame on me." And the last one is an interesting one. His name is Norm Hill, and that's a combination of my wife's maiden name and mine. And he's my roving ambassador. His job is to do the things that have not been specifically assigned to the other 9. Such, for example, I'm in my car and I'm driving downtown, and in these traffic conditions nowadays in almost every city, it's difficult to get a parking spot. But I never have any trouble in getting a parking spot because I send Norm Hill ahead and he has a place cleared out for me the time I get there. About a couple of years ago, I was telling one of my neighbors about this Norm Hill fellow, and he said, "Well, isn't that interesting?" I said, "Now, by the way, if I want to go down to the bank on Friday afternoon, banks close at 1 o'clock Friday, and I didn't have but a few minutes to get down there, not time enough to go over to a parking lot, which is 4 or 5 blocks away from the bank where I do business, I would send Norm Hill ahead, and when I got there, he'd have me a place right in front of the bank." Well, he said, "That reminds me, I have got to go to the bank. Would you mind letting me see how Norm Hill works?" I said, "Hop in, we don't have much time," and I drove pretty fast. And when we got down in front of the South Carolina National Bank, sure enough, there was no parking spot. Every place on both sides of the street was filled. And I stopped my car about 3 car lengths back of the front of the bank, and this man said, "Well, Norm Hill must have walked, and I noticed you drove pretty fast." I said, "Don't you worry about Norm Hill. He'll be here in good time." And within the time that I've been telling you the story, the man came out of the bank and got in the car right in front of the bank and drove off, and one after him got in the next one, and there were 2 spots. I said, "You see there? One to compensate me for my intelligence and one to show you that you ought to think twice before you criticize Norm Hill." I delivered a speech before Mr. W. Clement Stone's manager down in Miami, Florida, about 6 years ago, in which I described for them, as I have described for you, my 10 invisible guides. And when we got down to Norm Hill, you should have heard these men laugh. They thought it was terribly funny. But the first thing I knew, I would say within 6 months, every one of those men was using the same plan, and not only were they using it in connection with getting such minor things as parking spot, But they were sending their salesmen out. Their salesmen work under what is called cold turkey. That is to say, everybody they meet is a prospect. They don't have to have an appointment. Those salesmen were using that same plan, and they were sending Narnhill ahead to talk to the man they were going to interview and selling him before the salesman ever got on the job. That an astounding thing? Well, when these men first started that plan, Mr. Stone's men were earning, I should say, an average of $175, $200 a week, and within a year after that, they were averaging around $250 to $500 a week, and entirely because Narnhill had changed their mental attitude so that when they went in to sell the man, they didn't hear him when he said no. He kept on talking. Isn't that an astounding thing? You know, most of us hear no before the man says it. We know he's going to say no, and he picks up our mental attitude and reflects it back to us as his own. I used to work in a bank when I was a youngster as a teller. And I could tell when a man came into the front door and started toward my cage whether he expected to get what he was coming after or not. I certainly could. I could tell it every time. By the way he walked, by the way he looked around furtively, and by his attempt to engage me in useless conversation after he got up to the teller's cage before he presented the check. All intended to throw me off balance. Astounding thing what you can do in dealing with people if you understand these principles that I'm now talking about. We've just about conquered everything in the universe. We're now trying to conquer outer space. We've about done everything we can to uncover the powers of nature. But there's one yet unresolved objective we have not attained. We haven't learned how to live with one another. And one of the greatest things that this philosophy can do for you and those whom you contact and the world around you is to teach people how to live with one another under the mastermind principle so that they have more joy in living, they have more prosperity, they have better health, and they make this a better country into which to live.